Mark20.com.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
How were you offended about this Transgender Day back on Easter, so just a few days ago, on Easter Sunday? Because as President Biden was facing some heated backlash over marking March 31st as Transgender Day of Visibility, which, of course, this past this year fell on Easter Sunday. Well, the White House issued a response standing by the president's remarks. White House spokesman Andrew Bates released a statement saying those critical of Biden's inclusiveness message are trying to further divide the country. I'm going to give you a direct quote. Quote, as a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. Sadly, it's unsurprising politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. President Biden will never abuse his faith for political purposes or for profit. End quote. Again, that's Biden spokesperson, Andrew Bates. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 7-Eleven here on this Friday Eve. Our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is a pastor, director of Passion for Truth Ministries, holds a master's in theology and is currently pursuing his PhD. In addition to writing a book about a recent discovery made in Israel since founding Passion for Truth Ministries in 2008, he's developed himself into sharing these life-changing biblical insights with others around the world. Let's welcome to the show Pastor Jim Staley. Pastor Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Gary. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Are you kidding me? Thank you for coming on. Listen, I know this story is a few days old, but, well, number one, we're not on during the weekend. But number two, it's still, people are still talking about it. Let me ask you first, do you think this Catholic president, Joe Biden, is the most anti-Christian president we've ever had?
I think the answer to that was extraordinarily rhetorical. But yes, absolutely. Being kind of a guy, my whole alignment and lane is first century, early Jewish Hebrew culture, idiomatic expressions, the early paleo language, and how that fits into Christianity. And I can tell you, the word Christian itself is a Greek word with a Latin suffix, and it literally means Christ-like. And there's nothing about this president that I can say as a fruit inspector is Christ-like at all. Everything that comes out of him is not in support of the left. I think a lot of people misunderstand. He's not supporting the left. He's supporting himself. He is the left. He is a very, very extreme. And what's fascinating from my perspective is that Joe Biden, the president, is not, when he says he's not trying to alienate anyone, he's bringing people together, but he's alienating 65% of Americans that consider themselves Christian, that Easter is a holy day for them, and he's alienating them to the expense, to the pander to a very, very small minority that's less than 5%. So I've been on like almost over a dozen shows this week about this topic, and I can tell you people are still interested and still upset about it. Because our president doesn't even have the wisdom to do what every other president has done before him, which is not say anything. This thing has been going on since 2009. Yes, it was a coincidence that it landed on Easter, but he didn't have to say anything. The fact that he chose to is very indicative of where his position is.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I had prior to this past weekend, I'd never heard of Transgender Day of Visibility in 2009, 10, 11, 12, or anything going up. I first heard about it this year. Why? Because it fell on Easter Sunday. Evidently, it occurs every March 31st, and we haven't had an Easter on March 31st, I think, since 2013. So based on that, they have overlapped in the past. would you say, how do I want to ask this question? Obviously, so you're saying that Biden should have just stayed away from it. Why then? Why would he stoke the fire? Why would he purposely, who's he pandering to? I mean, it's a very small minority of individuals who identify as transgender. More people are Christians. So, including Democrats, Christian Democrats. So why would you rock that boat and alienate a majority of your voting base?
Look, for me, it's real simple. Again, even the news media and every outlet that I've been on, you know, they say, why is he pandering to the left? But if you understand psychology, and as a pastor and someone who does a ton of counseling and is really deals deep in the psychology of how people think, people don't represent or get behind something that is extraordinarily controversial and that could hurt them unless they are that particular minority. And I'm not saying that he's gay or a transgender, although the jury's out for me on that. But just as a believer in Christ, okay, as a pastor, it would not matter if I was the 1% in a population and if I said that Jesus in the Hebrew tongue, Yeshua, is Lord, and that would make me burn at the stake. I would do that. I would support anybody, if I was in charge, that believed like me. So I think what's happening here is really for the first time in history, we have a president who has actually gone past political agendas, and he's actually supporting his own belief system, and that's why he doesn't care about offending 65% of Americans, because he strongly believes in this belief system. I don't think he's pandering. I think he absolutely has adopted this as a religion of himself.
Well, what did George Costanza say one time? It's not a lie if you believe it, you know? Can you be transgender and Christian?
No, it's 100% impossible. And I know that's a controversial statement, but my job in our ministry is called Passion for Truth for a reason. We have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's like saying, can you get into heaven and be a sinner and not accept Christ? The answer is a resounding no. And we have an example of this in Scripture where Jesus came up to the woman at the well. He had a conversation with her, and he knew her that she was living in sin. She knew that she had had five husbands, that she was living in fornication, as she speaks. And Jesus did not wrap his arms around her and say, you know what, it's okay, I love you, let's come into my inclusive club and we'll all just sing kumbaya together. No, he lovingly corrected her. He got to her level and then corrected her and told her, go and sin no more. And Jesus said that I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father except for me. And if one chooses to continue to walk in sin, then he says, you are like your father, the devil. And so he defines homosexuality as a grave sin. It's a spit in his face because he created man and woman, and that is the image of God, those characteristics. So to say I'm not what God created me to be is to actually play God and say God made a mistake, he doesn't know what he's doing, I'm going to play God, and that's idolatry, and that is a strong judgment against anyone that's in idolatry. Right now, that's what we have in this world. Everyone is their own God. Everyone's doing whatever's right in their own eyes. And they're defining it ultimately by their definition of love, but it's not the Bible.
No, and I understand that. I understand that people are selective and cherry-pick their Christianity to suit their own, you know, make their own rules to suit their own needs. And I understand that, and I've had this same discussion with other pastors in the past. I guess what I'm asking is, I've heard that, well, God loves everybody. God created you in his image. He will not abandon you. He knows you're a sinner, but he loves you anyway. So and there are pastors that are performing gay marriages. You know, there are a very small percentage of transsexuals, you know, who say they have dysmorphia. Rather, this is not a fad for them, that they feel even since birth, before they even knew what sexuality was, because when they were young, they were playing in dirt, but they still didn't feel comfortable in their own skin and saying, man, this is not a fad. I'm not looking for attention. I would never wish this on my worst enemy. But I feel like I was born in the wrong skin. I mean, what do you say to somebody who comes to you, Pastor, and says, I believe in God, but I feel like I'm the wrong sex in the wrong body?
Yeah, 100%. There's a couple things I would say to that. Is part of it is the Christian confusion, because we actually don't read the book and really believe that God meant what he said when he said what he meant. And when God said, I made man and woman, and that's it, and when he said that homosexuality is deplorable to him, it's an abomination, it's an affront to his entire creation, that's the standard. That's where we start at. So when you get to a place where someone says, I feel like I'm born as this, I feel like that, I feel like this, there's two psychological things that happen, and one that is real. One is the psychological part of it is people are being manipulated today as young people because the culture is changing and saying it's okay, and they're removing the standard that God said, this is sin, this is wrong, I did not make you like this. Number two, once the society begins to take a turn and say that there is no God and God didn't make you like this and you can be what you want, then when it removes the standard, now man gets to choose by his feelings. Mm-hmm. And feelings psychologically are manipulated by circumstance. And so when someone grows up, for instance, I know so many homosexuals that I have dealt with and had interactions with, and well over, and I'm not exaggerating, well over 90% have had no father figure in their life. So the number one influence that creates solidarity of understanding which side of the fence you fall on, male or female, to ingrain that is gone. And when that's missing, then society is going to fill that. And so here's what I tell people that come to me. We have these conversations about homosexuality, and I had one actually fairly recently. And I said, look, here's the reality. God did not make, okay, the earth itself to be like this. The earth was supposed to be perfect. We weren't even supposed to have seasons, but the sin that's created in this earth has altered the reality, and now we have to deal with this. In the same way, God did not make you to be anything other than what he did, but circumstance, but situation has caused you to have these feelings, but these feelings are against the natural order of how God made you. So sure. What we do is we totally go to God, we institute and agree with his alignment and his word, and we say, God, give me divine assistance to move forward in what your will is, despite what I feel. And right now, everyone does what they want to do based on feeling, not based on reality of what the standard is. And so we cannot go by what the earth looks like, what our feelings look like, even because they can deceive us. The Bible even says, don't even believe your own heart, because your heart is deceitful above all things. And ultimately, those that I talk to that have had these type of issues, they end up having deeper relationship with God. Wow. Because of the intimacy and the trust that they have to have in order to move forward daily to go against their own feelings. And I've seen God drastically change these people and end up getting married and having children and having wonderful lives.
So I got to take a break here. I got to ask, when we come back, I'm going to ask you if homosexuality then is a free will choice. More with Pastor Jim Staley right after this.
Mom is gradually losing more and more of her memory, and I know it's only going to get worse. She doesn't want to move. The memories she has at home are special to her, but she needs help. Help I can't give her. That's why I leave her memory care needs to Your American Home Care for You. They do it all so that my time with Mom is about us.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cooking, cleaning, bathing, errands, and memory care to Your American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare, #4U.com.
Columbia Dental makes it easy to get quality dental care. They're open with late hours 7 days a week, so you get the best dental care whenever you need it. The Dental Guarantee. Teeth cleaning, exams, restorations, repairs, and teeth replacements. No matter what you need to keep your teeth healthy, Columbia Dental has it. Columbia Dental can do it. One day, same day, 7 days a week. Because your dental health shouldn't wait until Monday morning. ColumbiaDental.com. Stay connected through the day. The Talk of Connecticut. Coming up, Mike Gallagher, 10 to noon. Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And Sebastian Gorka on the drive home. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
25 minutes after the hour of 7, our guest is Pastor Jim Staley, the director of Passion for Truth Ministries. So I asked you a question before the break. You know, there's free will. Some people could often say sometimes we create our own problems, but are people creating? I know gay people. I don't know many transgender, you know, maybe a couple. I don't know any of them, though, that would purposely choose that lifestyle knowing that they'd lose family members, they'd lose friends, they'd be stared at, they'd be chastised, they'd be harassed, that they would be, you know, prejudices against them. Like, who signs up for that on their own free will, you know? And they feel, Gary, but I've got to be true to myself. Doesn't mean I don't believe in God. Doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I would have never have asked for this, but I have to be me. What do you say to them then?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's important to take a larger 30,000-foot view and look at the other categories. Because once we bring in other categories, everything becomes clear. See, what those that are gay have done is they've created an identity that they are what they feel. They are what they desire. And that's not an identity. That's a false identity that means that you become susceptible to the winds of your own doctrine that will absolutely change. Let me give you an example. So if someone is an alcoholic, right, or desires to have an affair or to desire to look at porn, that is not an identity. Just because someone you ask the question, why would somebody do this and know that they're going to lose, you know, their family, friends? Why do people have affairs knowing you're going to lose your wife and your children and your job? Why would people go into pornography knowing it's going to hurt your wife, it's going to hurt your children? People do this kind of stuff every day. People that are alcoholics, they absolutely hate who they are because of what they're doing, and they do it anyway, even though they know it's going to be life of destruction, because they really like the moment and the feeling, and they feel like, this is who I am, this is who my dad was. And so it's very similar. There's people that come from alcoholic homes that by the age of 12, they're already in their dad's liquor cabinet, they're already an alcoholic. I've worked with these people before, and they literally tell me, this is who I am. I work with drug dealers and drug addicts that have the exact same characteristics as someone that's gay. They take the position, this is who I am. And this is why they hang out with other drug dealers that affirm, okay, because we are sheep. That's why God, you said we're not the smartest animals in the world. He labeled us the sheep, which are one of the dumbest animals in the world. And what does sheep do? They congregate. We are social animals that try to find our similar frequency. So our identity as a person, unfortunately, the lie is the identity is what you feel, and it's what you want to do. And when you change the identity outside of God and say, okay, I am his, I am bought with a price. And by the way, you quoted a half a scripture earlier, and I just want to add to that. He says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. Mm-hmm. That's not for everybody. That's only those who are doing the will of God. God says, you can call me Lord. You can raise people from the dead. You can heal people. But if you don't know him personally and you're not doing his will, he says, you're not mine.
I know my scripture.
And so it's really, really important that your viewers know that the identity must be in Christ, and then we submit to him, and it's outside of our own desires and wills.
Are you saying, I've only got 20 seconds, Pastor. Are you saying to some degree you cure homosexuality?
I'm saying that I don't cure anything. All I do is point them to the standard, and God cures all things. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's incredible.
All right. And Joe Biden is – I only have 10 seconds. Joe Biden has pretty much ruined our relationship with Israel with wanting to oust Netanyahu. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, he's something else. I'll tell you that.
All right. All right, Pastor Jim Staley, thank you so much for your time this morning. When we come back, it's open phones. I see one line open. I'll hear from you.
News. I'm Gianna Gelosi, President.
Breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, the Talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
All right, I've got something for you. Listen to this. Man. This is what we talk about all the time. It kills me. It pains me. So, listen, federal officials just a couple days ago, or a few days ago, on Monday, they announced the arrest of a Honduran national named Jose Pavan Fermin, or Fermin, actually, I think it's. Anyhow, Fermin was arrested in November of 2016, 4 months after police said he followed a woman onto a bus in Norwalk, right here in Connecticut, and began complimenting her and harassing her. Police said he then followed her onto another bus before exiting with her near Laura Street. Again, this is down in Norwalk, Connecticut. Okay. Then he led the woman to his nearby apartment. This is all according to police reports. The woman said she felt pressured but agreed to go into his apartment where she was then raped. In 2018, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, suspended after serving 4.5. Okay, so in 2021, he was deported after being released from prison. Well, let me bring you up to date. January 2023, just about a little over a year ago, he's back in Connecticut, and guess what? He was arrested in Norwalk, charged with breach of peace, criminal trespass, resisting arrest, and the arrest came after police got a call from another intruder in home. Gave police a fake name. They take his prints, and then what? Determined that he was Fermin. Again, through the fingerprints. He tells them that he's living in Norwalk, and guess what police did? They let him go. Biden's America, my friends. You afraid? Should be. That's not a scare tactic. It's not a fabricated story. It's all public information. You can get it yourself. You're not going to hear about it on the news. You know that as well as I do, and you know why. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 811 here on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you on board the old morning train. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair joins us every other Thursday. Today being one of them, he is the House Republican leader. Let's welcome him back to the show, Vinny Candelora. Vin, good morning.
Good morning.
I tell that story, and it's hard for me to even get it out of my mouth because the frustration and I'm just, you know, it's like I'm so upset, but at the same time, I'm not surprised in the times that we're living in. What is it going to take for people to say, I've had enough? I mean, look, I don't want to get all political. Well, I shouldn't say that. Of course we get political. That's what you and I do. But for the sake of there's common sense. It's not even Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative. It's just, you know, we've had laws in place for years. You break the law, you violate the law, there's consequences. If you don't belong here, then we're going to help you get out and need to make sure that you don't come in. We have no vetting system. You know, it's just free nilly-willy. Just come on in. And, oh, you want to kill us? Oh, welcome, you know. You killer. I mean, and yet, I know we have an election this November, Vin. I don't want to sound so cynical here, but people will vote for him again. I mean, it's insanity, right? So help me rationalize this, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is irrational. It's difficult to put two and two together, but, you know, genuinely, I would suggest when people are voting that they find out where their elected officials are on the issues of crime, convictions, bail, because there is a segment, and it's predominantly Democrats, that want to eliminate the bail system. They don't want anyone to be held, no matter how dangerous they are, release them back into the communities. And obviously we're seeing the impact of it. You know, migrants and illegal immigrants have the ability to evade the law by slipping in and out of the country. So I think their flight risks are a little bit higher than somebody that was born and raised in Connecticut. And it points to a problem in and of itself when you have a, you know, a no bail system. But the reality is that many Democrats want it to apply to everybody. And what we're starting to see, like you see in Hartford, we have, you know, residents that are taking up arms and walking the streets to protect themselves because government is failing their fundamental role in providing public safety to its people. And it's certainly not the fault of the police officers. This is the system that they're required to operate under, you know. So, and we see it in every facet of life. We're going to be impacted. You know, they want to lower the blood alcohol level, but they're not going to allow police to pull people over if they're stealing a vehicle. You know, they're not allowed to pursue them, or they're not allowed to pull them over if they're smoking a joint. It's really a bizarre construct. And I think the Democrats are tearing down the fabric, you know, of our institution.
Well, I feel like we're living in a bizarre world. I mean, everything that we were taught was wrong and really is morally wrong is acceptable now, you know, and we get chastised for, you know, by saying, hey, man, that's not right. That's right. Oh, no. Well, then, you know, then you're a racist. A racist? What the hell are you talking about? Not a racist. Good God. Well, we're just saying these people don't belong. We don't even know who they are. You know,
It is a weaponized word that the other side tries to throw out there to not have the conversation. But we need to have the conversation because I think where we're going is without the ability to arrest people and hold them accountable for what they've done, you know, pretty soon we'll end up in a military state where government's required to call in the National Guard to address issues. We see it with street takeovers. Those have become so large that, you know, a 30-member police department cannot handle 1,500 people invading a community. It's we're not in a good spot, and I think long-term, the Democrats, the liberals, are going to get exactly what they don't want to get, and that is going to be a military state.
All right, so you mentioned, it's funny, because that's where I was going to go next with you. You brought up the street takeovers. And then if you really want to go back a week prior to that, there was in Rocky Hill, as I'm sure you heard, 43 car break-ins. So the police show up at the tail end. The criminals are still there. Some of them, I guess a couple of them took off and one or two were still there, I heard. And then they realize, oh my goodness, the cops are actually already here. They get in their car and they take off and the cops just, they can't pursue them. You know, and I sit there and go, well, what do we need? I guess we don't need you then. I mean, why? I mean, we do. But if their hands are tied for them doing what used to be their job when we had a much more safe, you know, a community, safe state, safe country, if for that matter. What's the purpose here? If we're going to have a lawless society here.
Yeah, it's a great question of, you know, for some of these Democrats, what do you want our police departments to look like? Do you want them just rescuing kittens out of trees? I mean, where are we going long term? Because it doesn't end. You know, we're trying to decriminalize now magic mushrooms because pot wasn't enough. And meanwhile, we're seeing what's happening in Oregon where they're trying to put the genie.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And recriminalize because they're finding, wow, people are all addicted and we have a homelessness problem. They have so many people ODing that they don't have enough first responders to issue Narcan. And they're actually training civilians to just drive in cars to deliver Narcan. I mean, it is a crisis. And it's disturbing to me that our Democrats that tout themselves as being so well-read, you know, are continuing down that path when we're seeing even Colorado is trying to put the genie back in the bottle. So this lawlessness stuff isn't going to work, and it's particularly, I think, more heinous with illegal immigrants because they do have the ability to move in and out of the country and to basically become anonymous, you know, completely off the grid. And, you know, and Democrats want to increase that anonymity by erasing the drive-only licenses that we have in the state of Connecticut that are issued to illegal immigrants so they could drive a vehicle. Now they want to help them blend in with society. As if they have the same rights and responsibilities as a Connecticut resident. And that is disturbing to me. You know, these are foreigners. They should not have a right to vote, for instance. But if they eliminate those drive-only cards and turn the licenses into one that looks just like mine, we're going to see them voting next.
Well, we're just talking about this. It's funny, last hour. And I think that's the Biden administration's end game, that they're looking to bring in, you know, a hundred thousand, a million, you know, a half a million, whatever, new voters, get them to register Democrat, and then have them infiltrate these red states. And before you know it, it's a blue wave in every state and game over for Republicans.
Well, and what's interesting is that you don't know how they're going to vote, because I think a lot of countries are much more conservative than our Democrat Party. So
they're not coming from those countries, though, Vin. They're not coming from those countries.
Well, some are and some aren't. But I think the point is, though, fundamentally, we are just seeing a tearing down of our institutions. So whether a state becomes blue or red is irrelevant. It's fundamentally, these people don't have a right to vote. We shouldn't be facilitating them to get into the country. We shouldn't be giving them our tax dollars and all these benefits that our own residents don't get. And we certainly shouldn't be making it easy for them to vote. But when you let a rapist out and to return to our country, you really think they're going to care whether or not they have registered to vote illegally? It's really a joke. It's naive. It's diabolical. And, you know, I hope that the public starts waking up to this, because it's exhausting.
What's the line in the sand that the Democrats have given you? In other words, what's their threshold as far as, yeah, we'll legalize the shrooms? Or I hear cocaine may be part of it next year. And, you know, we'll have all these illegals in, and they can rape our citizens, and we're not going to have the police go after them. As evident with the story I just told in my lead-in to you, like, this isn't like somebody ran a stop sign, you know, or what this is. These are heinous crimes. What's the end game? What's that threshold the Democrats have said? The line in the sand is this. You can do everything in the world up to this, but you can't do this. What is that?
I've yet to see that line in the sand. And also yet to see a principled arguments. I mean, I think they're very emotional, generally, their arguments, and they're not based in principle. I remember years ago when we were looking at, you know, requiring security cameras in every business. And Democrats push back on the right to privacy. You know, now they're throwing cameras up all over the place.
Yeah, what's your opinion of these cameras, these traffic cameras?
What's that?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you said something about cameras, and we saw what Hamden's doing and Waterbury's doing with these.
They've given every town the ability to put them up, so you're going to see, you know, these cameras potentially going up, ironically, in Democrat communities, because they don't care about your privacy anymore. So it's just, they're very, you know, I just think that they're devoid of any principles, and it's concerning. You know, we see it right now going into the budget headwinds, where revenues are evaporating, and their response is, well, let's just ignore the fiscal caps and get around them. There's no principle that they stand on. They claim to stand on abortion, but that's just to get votes for them. They don't care about the people and how they're impacted in their health care. They just want to figure out how to get more votes. And it's a dangerous way to run government. And we've seen what's happened at the federal level. And we need to prevent it at the state level, because we're going to have nothing left of our institution. And especially by way of public safety. That is the fundamental obligation of government, to provide public safety.
You know, by the way, I got to take a break here 1 second, and when we come back, we'll talk about the budget. But just a little FYI, because I talk to the electorate every morning, all walks of life, thousands of people, you know, who listen to this show, whether it's on radio or our podcast that we are streaming on, or whatever. They let us. Actually, we even hear from people who don't want to come on the air. They'll message us. A lot of people, and it's predominantly a conservative audience that we have here, don't mind the cameras. They're saying that, you know, if it could help solve crimes, and particularly with illegals, you know, if it can help solve crimes, they're all for it. You know, I know it's Big Brother, as you were saying earlier, you know, we're being watched. Is that government overstepping its boundaries of invasion of privacy and Big Brother always looking over you?
I used it to point out the hypocrisy, but I'll tell you, we had a hit and run in North Brantford. The person was killed.
Oh,
and if it wasn't for cameras, hopefully we're going to catch this person. And if it wasn't for cameras, we would have no hope. So
there you go.
They do serve a purpose.
Okay. Absolutely. Let me take a really short break. We're going to come back, and I want to talk about the budget right after this.
Mom is gradually losing more and more of her memory, and I know it's only going to get worse. She doesn't want to move. The memories she has at home are special to her, but she needs help. Help I can't give her. That's why I leave her memory care needs to Your American Home Care for you. They do it all so that my time with Mom is about us.
Make your time together memorable and leave the cooking, cleaning, bathing, errands, and memory care to Euro American Home Care of Berlin. 860-829-0208. That's 860-829-0208. Online at homecare4u.com. Yankee Peddler and Pawn in East Hartford is Connecticut's premier pawn shop, paying you top dollar whether you are pawning or selling your items. It's also your first choice to find great deals on used items. Yankee Peddler and Pawn has everything from gold and silver jewelry to electronics, power tools, some musical instruments, and so much more. With nearly 200 five-star Google reviews, customer service is always their number one priority. Go see Joe at Yankee Peddler and Pawn at 7 Pitkin Street in East Hartford and tell them Gary sent you.
A smarter way to start the day. Gary Byron and the Talk of Connecticut. Listen without a subscription on the Talk of Connecticut free listening app.
25 minutes after the hour of 8, our guest is House Republican leader, my former cohort, my former colleague up in the House, Vin Candelora. Vin, I want to spend some time on this budget. And, you know, as you know, I talk about this quite regularly is when it comes to the budget. We have a biennium budget, and this is... The election year is not the year of the budget. It's the in-between year. And people wonder, well, I thought, why are you talking about the budget? I thought that was last year, and that'll be back again next year. And I explain that there's tweaks. Oftentimes that, you know, the numbers come in. There's got to be adjustments that are made. But we also notice that there's a lot of Democrats that are opting for gimmicks. So I was hoping that maybe you could maybe shed some light on this. Democrat leaders, I know, they're signaling that, like, they may not make any official adjustments to this, you know, in-between year, this, you know, of the budget. Give us an update.
They want to spend $300 million more than what we're currently spending, and we're already over our spending cap by 30.
What happened to our guardrails that we voted on?
Right. So... I'm not sure how they're going to accomplish that without reopening the budget. You know, and the problem is that we've had 5 years of revenue growth, and it's been relatively easy when you have all this COVID money flowing in to do budgets. And I think what's happened is obviously the revenue has dried up. Our surplus is almost zero. It will probably be zero by the end of April. So there's not a lot of room to go. And, you know, these guys want to figure out a way to create a budget that, frankly, is out of balance. And next year, what would happen if it's out of balance, that our rainy day fund would fill in that hole. So while they're not directly breaking the cap, there is an indirect violation of that cap because they're knowingly budgeting a deficit. And I'm not sure our Constitution allows that. I think we have an obligation to have a balanced budget. If we know it's out of balance, I think we are constitutionally obligated to come in and balance it. It was put on the books when the income tax was raised back in 91 or 92. And we've got to honor those commitments to the voters.
All right. So is the ARPA money, is it all used up?
It's almost gone. I mean, I hear though, almost gone. We have about upward, we could have of $200 million. So it might be $150 to $200 million that we have available. You know, and we'll wait to see how the Democrats are going to spend that. And, you know, Approps met yesterday. They're gaveling out without doing a budget this year. So everything is going to go behind closed doors. We don't know what the outcome is going to be on this budget.
Every time I hear the Democrats, and then I'll hear Ned Lamont say that he's actually for the fiscal guardrails. And if the Democrats...
Well, that statement's going to be tested.
Well, okay, so that was actually kind of my question. Yeah. I mean, if they present something to him, he could realistically veto that, right? And then it's got to come back to the legislature for a two-thirds majority.
Yeah, he could. And hopefully it doesn't get that far. I mean, hopefully we're able to, you know, put something together that's acceptable to everyone. But I don't know. And the problem is that we're starting to get into tough times because of that federal money is gone. So these guys actually have to live within their means. They were really sort of, feasting off of all that ARPA money. And now that's gone. And they have a problem with living within their means. And I am not sympathetic. You know, we knew this was coming. You had an opportunity to prioritize your goals. They prioritized nothing and funded everything to even, you know, illegal immigrant health care. And so now all of those overruns are going to come back to haunt us.
This has gone from, you know, an expensive state to live in to something that's not even a state that's it's not even on people's charts anymore. You know, it's like this is just ridiculously stupid. I mean, I'm working for the government. I'm not working for the government per se, you know, literally, but it seems like all the money is going to taxes, all tax hikes and inflation.
Democrats have really become the class of the elite.
The elites. Oh, yes. Without
They're
a doubt.
The class of themselves.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Vin, excellent job, man. As always, I appreciate your time.
Number breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The talk of Connecticut.
Thank you.
AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
We have talked about so much this morning. I always enjoy when our next guest into the Daily Connor Memorial Company interview show joins us, which is, of course, every other Thursday for those of you who are keeping score at home. He is president of Speakeasy Ideas, where he brings to the organization a lifetime of professional experience within academic, public policy, and think tank circles. He is also the executive leadership coach for J.R. Butler. I almost said J.G. Wentworth, but then we'd have to strike up the chorus. And he's been a keynote lecturer in the leadership program of the Rockies for more than 20 years. Now, he earned his PhD from the Claremont Graduate University School of Politics. This guy specializes in classical political philosophy, American political history, and constitutional law. Wow.
That's a resume.
Listen, he's an asset to have on anybody's show. We have him here every other week. Let's welcome back to the show Thomas Kranewitter. Thomas, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gary. Every now and then I like to think of myself as an asset in the CIA meaning of the word. You know, I'm one of those highly trained, lethal assassins out running around the world. But, but of course, that's just me pretending to be Matt Damon in movies.
Okay. I don't know. What movies has he done lately?
Oh, that whole Jason Bourne series. You know?
Okay. So I've never seen any of them.
Oh, he's really? This rogue CIA agent, this highly trained, you know, assassin, and he goes off the rails. So they send assets after him.
That must be a 2000s movie.
Yeah, it is. I'm getting old, you know. For me, it's not just that the years blur together; the decades are starting to blur together.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Jaws.
Oh, God. I can remember when Jaws came out. We're going to need a bigger boat.
That's right. I'm messing with you there, my friend. How have you been? How are things going in your world? How's your you've got a stack going on here, right? A Substack? What do they call that? Yes, Substack.
You know, it's kind of exciting. I've launched a new Substack. Man, I'd love it if some of your listeners would stop by and pay a visit and say hello. They can look up my name, Thomas Kranewitter, on Substack. That audience, I just launched this, and it's growing very quickly.
Well, let me ask you. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but just so that you don't go too deep while people are going, what the hell is a Substack? Why don't you explain what Substack is?
So a Substack is a way for thinkers, writers, authors to provide more frequent content, more material than their normal publishing outlets. So, you know, people who either write books, which is in my case, or occasional newspaper articles or magazines, you're always limited by, you know, the publishing schedule of those platforms, where the Substack is our own personalized platform. A lot of journalists and authors have created their own Substacks. And what's wonderful about it is people who say, yeah, you know, I like the work that person does, the Substack is the way to follow that person, get more of their material. It's very well organized. There's a great archive. If mm-hmm. you subscribe, you can go through, you know, all the old articles in a way that when someone publishes on social media, say Facebook or Twitter or things like this, and if you think, oh, that person wrote something, you know, a year ago, and I want to go find it, it's really difficult to find. Whereas the Substack makes it very easy, very convenient.
All right, so, but it's text.
And you can search through it.
People read it. It's text. You know, they got this thing, it's called audio, where you can do basically what you're talking about, but podcasting it.
Yeah, and that's through the same platform, Substack. In fact, I'm experimenting with it right now.
Okay.
I've published a few articles, written pieces, and I'm going to be releasing some audio and also maybe some video podcasts in the future. I've given mine a kind of curious name. My podcast is the Liberty Lyceum Zetetic Questions for the Zeitgeist. I love that word, zetetic. It's rooted in an ancient Greek word meaning to ask questions, to inquire. Zetetic, a zetetic person ask questions, but not mere random, silly questions. They're questions aimed at the ruling elites, those who are in power, those who say they're smart. Think of the Anthony Fauci types of the world. Zetetic questions are directed at those types of figures who are shaping public opinion, shaping public and political culture. And the whole point of my Substack is, I think we need to be more zetetic today. We need to be challenging and asking as we watch our nation transform from a self-governing constitutional republic into an administrative state run by bureaucratic fiat. We need to be challenging those.
Why are we not? It's funny that you bring this up, because last hour a caller was talking about, you know, people not voicing their opinions anymore. They're not speaking up. And they're just sitting there taking it, saying, well, what we can do about it. And that shows complacency, you know. And I'm not saying you got to take up arms and start, you know, causing riots. But we do need to speak up more, right?
There is something we do. Yes, I agree. And I'm going to add to that. It's difficult for many people. It's a challenge. If you go all the way back to the emergence of philosophy, I'm going back to ancient Athens and the tragic life of Socrates. You know, Socrates, in some ways, he was radical, but when you really look at what he did, he listened to the stories that were being told to everybody else, and he listened to all the smart, wise people, the political elites, the priestly class of his day. And he listened and he responded with questions. He would pick up on contradictions and he'd say, wait a minute, what do you mean by this concept of justice or law or whatever they happen to be talking about? And for asking those questions, they ended up executing him. I mean, it's a quite fascinating story. They said, we've had enough. You are undermining the legitimacy of the political class because you keep raising all these questions and you won't go away, and they end up killing him through legal execution. And the vast majority of the people around him just stood back and like, whoa, we don't want anything to do with that, right? And yet, if Socrates hadn't done that, we would have had no philosophy. We would have had what we call science today. It emerged in that moment when people said, you know, I don't buy into the official politically correct way of thinking about things. I want to know the truth on my own. I want to be a free thinker. That's the foundation of all of philosophic and scientific thought. And it's difficult. Fast forward all the way up to the American Revolution. There you have some feisty, spirited, free thinking individuals who say, you know, we don't, the British Empire was saying, look, you little colonists, Just be quiet. You don't need representation in part. Remember the whole motto, no taxation without representation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The British responded and said, you are represented. The whole British Empire is represented in Parliament. So just be happy that you're part of this glorious empire. And these free-thinking colonists said, no. When we say we want to be represented. We want to hold our own elections. We want to send our own actual representatives to Parliament. We don't think we're being represented just by being part of the glorious British Empire. And as that dispute grew, eventually it boiled over into a revolution. And even at that point, remember, two-thirds of the colonists in 1776, as they were, you know, writing their Declaration of Independence, two-thirds of the colonists did not support the revolution. That was too risky. That required too much courage to stand up and question those who were in power.
Right.
A third of the colonists actively opposed the revolution. They stayed loyal to the king. They said, no, we're loyal Englishmen.
Yeah, mainly New Englanders, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And a third of the colonists said, you know, we're not in support of this revolution. We don't really oppose it. We don't really care. We just want to be left alone. We just want to, you know, do our farming and raise our kids and go to church, and we want to be left alone. It was a minority of the colonists who said, this is it. This is time for actual independence. We need to break away, create our own sovereign nation, figure out how to govern ourselves. So even at that point, that willingness to stand up to the class of people who are in power, who are in control, who are shaping public thought, public opinion, public policy, man, it's difficult. It requires a great amount of wisdom and knowledge combined with courage, right? You got to have some smarts about you to be able to challenge the political class intelligently, and it requires some courage to stand up in public. And knowing that you might get, you know, you might get smacked down in ways that are kind of embarrassing or painful.
Yeah, I mean, I got to take a break here. All right, I always get my thoughts end up getting interrupted half
the
time.
You could talk to him all day.
I could.
Yeah.
I could, especially with the history books that I read and what everything he's saying right now. A lot of people aren't even aware that of what Thomas just said. That you're right, back in the 1700s or 70 late 1700s, there were states that didn't even want to even sign on to the Constitution. Look at Rhode Island and North Carolina. I mean, the Revolutionary War was already over. Washington was just barely in his first term when, you know, or when they decided to ratify the Constitution. All right, stay right there, Thomas. We're going to come right back. More with Thomas Crainewitter right after this.
You love your truck, so give your truck the best at Ron's Automotive, the truck accessory superstore. Ron's Automotive has everything to get the most out of your truck, including custom bumpers, ladder racks, tonneau covers, WeatherTech mats, performance brakes and exhaust, plus custom wheels and tires. Rev it up at Ron's Automotive, 22 Thomaston Road, Litchfield. Online at rons-auto.com.
Fraudulent tax returns due identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Their U.S.-based restoration specialists are dedicated to helping solve identity theft issues, and all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which means if you lose money because of identity theft, LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan. Help protect your information with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com and save up to 25% your first year with my name, Clay, as your promo code.
He's conservative, and he's a little in the middle. The talk of Connecticut Morning Show, 103.3 Hartford and 104.5 Litchfield.
All right, 23 minutes after the hour of 9, our guest, constitutional scholar Thomas Crainewitter. So I'm looking over your Substack. You've got something called Job Training, No Substitute for Liberal Education. You want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's been a real transformation in the world of higher education, especially colleges, universities, where today I think the vast majority of students and probably their, you know, their parents as well, they think about college in terms of what job can I get? You know, I'm going to go get a certain degree in order to get a certain job. Now, there's something bad with that. I'm not saying that's a problem. I actually want people to be, you know, have some useful skills and be able to do something productive. That's good. But that's a very different way of thinking about education than thinking about it in terms of a genuine liberal education or a liberal arts education or what some people will call a classical education, which was far more about it was not focused on learning a particular skill. It was about becoming a better human being, learning just how to live well, think well, make wise, good choices. Because it turns out, like everything else in the world, right? If you want to learn how to weld well, you got to practice it. You got to have someone show you. Here's sure. how you weld, and then you got to practice over and over and over. Or you know, every athlete knows this. You want to learn how to hit a curveball. You got to practice at it over and over. Same thing. If you want to learn how to be courageous and how to be wise and how to be just in your interactions with others, first you have to understand what these are, what these moral concepts mean, and then you got to actually practice doing it, because it turns out doing it is, we're very tempted to do the opposite. Very often we're tempted to be unjust, right? Or we're tempted to be cowardly rather than courageous. And that is what liberal education used to be. It used to mean freeing of the soul, freeing of the individual to go make their own choices, because they have that equipment, they have that virtue. That's a much loftier educational goal, living well, than merely learning, you know, a specific set of skills so that you can go do a specific job. And I'm trying to encourage people, when they think about education, to think about this older model.
But doesn't one lead to the other?
And when I say, you know, liberal education, I don't mean progressive indoctrination.
No, I know that.
I mean freeing people to make their own choices.
But doesn't one lead to the other? Doesn't having a skill set lead to living well?
Not necessarily, because living well requires tackling a lot of deep questions, deep human questions, deep philosophic questions. Questions like, man, is there truth? Is there truth in the world? Is there a purpose to my life? There are answers to these questions, but most students are not aware that they're answers, because their teachers say, well, that's just a matter of your personal feeling, and they move on. One of the statistics that bothers me most, Gary, about the United States today, we have record high rates of teenage suicide. And I look at that and I think, Mike, here's what's even stranger. For the most part, these are not poor kids struggling, you know, with all the problems of poverty. They're middle class and rich kids. And they're going into their closets and they're hanging themselves, or they're stealing their dad's shotgun and blowing their heads off. And I think, what is happening with all these young people where they think life has no purpose, life is worth giving up at the age of 14 or, you know, 16 or 18? My goodness, these people have their whole lives in front of them. I think they're being robbed of purpose and meaning in their life because they're being robbed of a genuine liberating, purpose-driven type of education. And I think it's time to recover. In many states across the country, there are movements for educational choice, educational reform, so that we can offer better liberal, classical-based education. In your state, in Connecticut, that's been a real challenge. There's an entire educational, bureaucratic, union-dominated apparatus that absolutely opposes things like charter schools, you know, and any kind of school choice.
Right.
They try to shut that down at every opportunity they have.
Now, we talk all the time, Republicans talk all the time about, you know, freedom of choice for schools, you know, school choice, you know, and keep getting, you're right, there's so many roadblocks, and it's a very powerful union, the teachers' union here in Connecticut.
I want to remind your listeners that the teachers' union, like all other government employee unions, I want to make this point clear. This isn't just teachers. It's all government employees who form unions. They serve one main purpose, and it has nothing to do with whatever industry or sector they're in. They are money laundering services for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party looks at you as a productive person. You're making money, Gary, and what they would like to do is just use the law to take your money and put it in their own pockets. Now, they can't get away with that, but what they can do is they can take your money in the form of taxes, They can hire a bunch of government employees and use your taxes to pay those employees. And what do those employees do with their money? They give some to the union. And what does the union do with that money? They turn around and donate it to Democratic politicians.
Yeah.
It's simply a sophisticated money laundering system. So you'll notice when you hear...
Really quick.
I want your listeners to pay attention.
We have 10 seconds.
When Democrats talk about anything, it always involves hiring more bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Always. No matter what the subject is.
Opt out of dues, my friends. Thanks, Thomas. We'll talk in 2 weeks. Thomas Kranewitter, a constitutional scholar. All right, we are coming back with open phones. Dial now.
News. I'm Therese Crowley. President Biden has a call with Israel Prime Minister.